Mickey Hart here. You're listening to GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR, sponsored by AIB. It's great to be back, lads. It's I feel refreshed, I feel ready to go. And what have I missed?
It was like when the you know, when a sub teacher comes into school, you know, and you kind of wreak havoc. It was like that for the last couple of weeks, so we're on our best behaviour today, I think.
I hope you don't listen back to any of the other ones, because they were a disaster.
I took a complete break from GAR and Sports Show Live. I just didn't want to know about you, lads. I did not want to know about you.
You must be well fresh then, nothing to complain about today.
Might have something to complain about with this draw on tonight. But what I want to start off with, lads, because this is why I say that I miss anything. It feels like I miss nothing, because what was news the last episode before I left is still news. Because this Gooch Cooper's testimonial, which I distinctly remember giving my thoughts on before I left, seems to be the most topical debate now, maybe 3 weeks later. And Joe Brolly, who's obviously up in arms about it, is the one that's keeping this in the public eye when, you know, this is probably not what he wants at all. But Mike Quirk wrote an absolutely brilliant piece, I thought, in The Examiner. Mike Quirk's pieces are always brilliant, in my opinion, in The Examiner. And right, he really takes the piss out of Joe. Now, Joe completely took the piss out of Gooch, maybe unfairly, but Joe has a bee in his bonnet about Kerry football in general. He's a bee in his bonnet about the Gooch. They played in the same position. Gooch is much better than Joe. I'm not suggesting that that's anything got to do with it. But Mike Quirk compared Joe to the High Sparrow, who was a leader of a religious zealots who dedicated every walking moment of their lives to fighting any and all vices going on in the city of King's Landing. So this is who he's comparing Joe Brolly to. And Joe Brolly basically is the High Sparrow of the GAA, and he is fighting to maintain the highest standard of moral standards within the association, and that's Joe's job. So Joe takes no money from any GAA event that he goes to. Joe doesn't take any payment for any DRA cases he brings to the GAA. He basically does everything for free, and he's a true Gael for doing that. Gooch could go down and coach teams in Kerry and might not look for any payment out of it, but because Gooch is getting a testimonial, which I think in the bigger picture, if you're a brand ambassador for a car, you're getting a free car. Is there any much difference between being a brand ambassador? You're not really doing much, you're just driving a car around. Gooch is getting money for just going to a dinner.
Yeah.
Like, is there any, it's like what Mike Quirk rightly points out, it's as clear as mud, you know, the distinction between a lot of these money making ways of making money from your GAA profile.
It's a brilliant piece. If anyone hasn't read it, they really should, because Brolly's piece, I didn't particularly like the tone of it, but it is funny, and kind of Mike Quirk responds in kind. It's really funny, it's really good. The self-appointed moral compass of the GAA was my favourite line.
Yeah.
But my as you mentioned, Brolly's like a dog with a bone with this Gooch thing, and my issue would be, as you said, he's very selective in the people he points out that are making money out of GAA. And I can't remember him ever being this vehement, for example, about managers getting money like from clubs. And the thing about that is that managers will be paid directly out of the coffers of the GAA, which is far worse than the audience that Gooch is targeting, which is a corporate audience who are willingly parting with their money.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So that's that. I don't think he's acknowledging that at all, and that's the big thing for me.
Yeah, no, I think I would completely agree with that. Another brilliant line in Mike Quirk's piece is, "Remember Cooper's sin again. Thou shalt not profit from the association for fear of eroding the ethos of purity and light the sparrow has taken a sacred oath to protect."
I mean, yeah, and I know like the line people would use as a Brolly is on RT getting money and he's writing columns getting money, but what I would argue there is that Brolly is doing that, he's doing a job for that money, and it's not really, it's like similar to how I might get paid, believe it or not, for writing about the GAA.
Yeah.
That's a job and I'm getting paid for it in kind. Colin Cooper one, like, this is sort of the argument you're using there, Connor, could also be used in the other side of it, like, you know, so Colin Cooper, like, we don't like managers getting paid, we don't like players getting paid, and this is just a more extreme example of it. This is the most extreme one of it, and what's happening is it's not a job that Colin Cooper's doing, even the car ambassador thing, not doing a job, it's just, it's actually being paid indirectly for playing?
There, here you go.
The problem?
No, you see, I disagree with this, because what is work? Right, it's different things to different people. So, like, I mean, I would agree, Joe Brawley, his piece in The Independent is journalism, and his pieces are usually good, and a lot of thought goes into it. So, whatever money he earns, now he has got that column on the back of his profile that he got from playing GAAs. That's the only comparison there, because that's work. Mm. Sunday Game is a little bit less work, as far as I'm concerned. He goes down, watches a match. There's no huge analysis goes into it. He might talk off the top of his head. This is a match he'd be watching anyway. Mm. So you call that work? You know, like, it is work, but it's not easy work.
Bad newspapers and sites and stuff as well. So
another,
it's harder to...
But another thing I would say, like, a lot of celebrities would see public appearances as work, would see that's their job, that's work to them. So yeah, what is work to you might not be work to somebody else. And what's, like, I mean, a lot of people would say our job, working in the media, doing a podcast, is this work? People would do this job as a hobby. Like, I mean, so it's not a clear distinction of what work is. I went to in Las Vegas before and went to a nightclub, and P. Diddy was there, right? So he was paid something like 500,000, and he came out in a balcony and waved to the crowd. That he would class that as a public appearance and work. Yeah. So, like, you can make the argument that Gooch is working at this function. He's going to have to make a speech at it. He's going to have to write that speech. He's going to have to deliver the speech. He's cleaning out a corporate sector that are well able to afford it. More power to Gooch. Cooper is the way I look at it. Like, I don't think Joe's been consistent, like what Mike says, in, you're talking about manager payments, and I think all these media jobs are kind of under the same umbrella, that you're all getting like, for example, a footballer will go down and open up a shop, he'll cut the tape, he might not have to say anything. He's getting paid for that. So how is that really any different? The shop is paying him. He's getting the gig on the back of his profile. This happens all over the country. Managers and players doing this. Why is there not the same issue as this? I think the problem with Gooch is the obscene amount of money that Gooch is getting.
That's part of it.
But, like, that shouldn't be. The principle should still remain consistent.
No, again, I'm not saying that's right, but that's why definitely this has gained more traction. But... Yeah, like, but the thing is, it's sold as a testimonial celebration of his career, so it does seem like that he's played all this time. And listen, I'm Gooch's biggest fan, but it's like he's played all this time. Now this is a nice payoff for him. And you might, I don't really, like, personally, I don't care that much. You know, whatever he wants to do, fine. But I can see where people like Joe and that camp is definitely coming from, because we don't like you know, the same way somebody might give you grief now off the back of this for Parnells or whatever. I'm not sure what deal you had there, but players have been paid, managers have been paid,
deal?
And we don't like it. And I, like, Joe would probably be consistent in thinking about this. Like, he would give off about managers and players as well. Like, you know, I've seen him give off before about, I'm not going to name, but about managers and Derry and that. Like, and even just reported money that goes around, and it's not right. And this is just a bigger scale that he wants to give off about.
Yeah, it's just a bigger... Gooch has taken this to a new level. But just to finish up on this, lads, and I just know from my playing career how much... And, like, I mean, I played in an era that wasn't anywhere near what it is now, and that's only in the space of maybe six years since I was last on a leash panel. But playing inter-county football, lads, it dominates your whole thought process. Your life is based around this, especially around championship time. The pressure of performing, the pressure of training, the pressure of recovery, the pressure of talking to your family, talking to your friends, it dominates your life, because if you want to get away from it, the people you meet are only seeing you, and they want to talk about it. You think about nothing else, only training, matches. And it's hard to find that balance, even back when I was playing, and I would have been one of the fellas on the scale of definitely being able to find a balance. But there's fellas now whose lives are completely dedicated to this. The money is, the GAA is churning out huge, generating huge money with Sky deals, with high ticket prices for games, and generating all this money. Like training for an amateur sport, they're trying to fit in after working hours the same level of training as professional teams. You've Keith Andrews coming to watch the Dublin Footballers, we were told recently, and he's learning off them. Like, this is an Ireland international. So, like, I mean, you're looking at this and you're saying, why the hell don't they deserve a few quid? Like, it's the natural next step. I think this fight against professionalism is futile. It's a waste of time, because it's already professional. The only thing that's missing is the payments to players. And that's what everybody doesn't have a problem with, all this training and professional standards and, oh, well, they don't have a professional setup. You know, they use that as a stick to beat county teams with. They want professionalism, but you want to get a few quid? This is amateur, absolutely. Like, it's nonsense. It's, you can't change it back to being the amateur, at the amateur game that Joe is banging on about. It's not possible. It's gone too far now. So the next step is now, I think, for your life to be dominated that much, is that players will want some monetary reward for when they see what the association, the revenue they're generating.
You just mentioned as well, like it dominates any intercounty player's life, never mind somebody like Gooch, probably the highest profile player in the history of the association. It's actually something he brings up a lot in his book, and he kind of says towards the end of it, he mentioned the Sky deals and this sort of stuff, and he says the GAA is having their cake and eat it, and there's going to come a time very soon that they're going to have a big decision to make.
Yeah.
And yeah, just like somebody that, you know, like Gooch lives in Killarney, he's just like he talks about kind of living very close to where he works and just being in that bubble, was afraid to go out for a pint of milk at times because he didn't want to meet people and have to talk about football. So it, like, you have to take that into consideration as well, and he's right. And as you said as well, the GAA, we're going to have to face up to this issue sooner rather than later.
It will need to be controlled, Lou, because you can't have one person earning 125 grand for a night and somebody else not. Like, it would need to be some sort of regulated thing. And in Joe's defence, yeah, he does bang on about not training too hard and training twice a week and all that. Like, that's what he wants. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, he does do that as well. Yeah. But I also remember during the Tyrone time, the Tyrone revolution, when they were in All-Ireland, they had professional set up and they had the system and Kerry didn't. And I specifically remember him saying stuff like this.
So I meant Joe 2017.
Yeah. I think everybody fell asleep at the wheel, lads, and we turned a blind eye to the way the game is going, and now it's gone so far down the road of professionalism. Stop crying about the way it's going to go, because we're all powerless to stop this now. The only thing that has slowed it down is that the GPA have lost their balls and now they're part of the GAA, and they could have led this for players to get a few quid off the GAA. So the only thing probably slowing this down is who is going to drive this forward. And that's the way I see it, but I think it is inevitable. And like, if players, knowing how much they give to the game, can have a private function and take money off a corporate sector, I say more power to them. Like, and I'm not going to lie, I said it on the last podcast. The minute when I heard about Gooch's money that he was earning, the first emotion I felt was jealousy. Only jealousy, because he's earning all that and I got nothing for mine. Like, I mean, it's very hard emotion to try and put back into the back of your mind. And you look at people who've never played the intercounty game, of course you're going to see a lad earning 200 grand for a night from an amateur game. You're immediately thinking, bloody hell, you're jealous of it. And that's why I think he's getting criticism of it. But we'll move off that, because Cora Staunton, this was a lovely bit of news. It was a very unexpected bit of news. Like, Cora's 34, just lost an All-Ireland final, and the next minute you see Cora Staunton in an Aussie Rules jersey, and she's making a transfer over there to the Great Western Sydney Giants. And like, I mean, anyone that's not a fan of Cora Staunton is a little bit of a weirdo as far as I'm concerned. She's in the Gooch Cooper kind of category, as in one of the greats in her position, and even a lot more than the Gooch for her scoring returns. So at 34, it was a lovely feel good story to see Cora get a professional contract over there. Then I started reading it's only a 4 month contract, and there's a few different bits that I hadn't realised. Malachy Clerkin had a piece in the Irish Times there today which said it's only a short term contract. It's almost like a free holiday for Cora.
Yeah, everybody wins as well. I mean, I think she won her 19th club title there last weekend. She goes out, once she's finished with the club championship, she goes down to Australia. She plays for, I think, maximum until the end of March. I think that's when the season ends. She's not going to miss out on any club. She's going to be back for the majority of the intercounty season. She gets to spend 4 months down in Australia as a professional athlete, learning a new sport. Might take her a while to adapt, but like, no more than being good at Cora's brilliant at soccer, she's brilliant at rugby. I wouldn't be surprised if she's an amazing instant success. She's family down there, so like, it kind of is it's not a holiday, but like, it's an amazing experience. I'm absolutely delighted for her. And you know, Mayo fans worried that like, she might miss out, but if she's going to go again, she'll be back in time for next season. So yeah, I think it's thumbs up all around.
That's the thing, I heard an interview from her there as well, and I didn't like realise, she just kept reiterating that she had to ask her club permission. Like, I mean, Cora Staunton should just say, listen, I'll hang around, but like, I mean, I'll be back next year and I will be walking onto the team, buddy. So like, I mean,
GAA's gone too far.
But like, I mean, that's the reality of it. And like, I mean, she's going, like you said, from February or January until March, the end of March, and then she's back for Mayo next year. So she's not retiring from Mayo. She's coming back to play with a club in the Connacht Club. So she's going to stay with them until the end of that, and then she's heading out. So she's not letting anyone down, which was very important to her. I thought, again, that was a lovely thing to hear her say, and I'm not letting anybody down. Someone at that level in their sport still, like, I'd be just out the door. Like, I mean, you know, like, I wouldn't be asking anybody's permission to do this. Yeah. But that wasn't her attitude, which was nice to see. She doesn't have my attitude, which is always a plus.
I remember interviewing her last year before the championship, and sort of the tone of it was, so you're staying on for another year. You know, that was like, and even her, like, she'd been there so long, and it was like, yeah, I decided to give it another crack, and then she's obviously played two more championships since then and just gotten better. But what happens if she's which I'm sure she will be a big success down there, surely they'll want to keep
bringing her out. This is the thing, I think she can make this is like going to America for the summer.
That's what I was thinking, yeah,
because the payments aren't exactly huge. Like, the highest level girls out in that the Aussie rules are earning 27 grand a year, €18,000. So, like, I mean, it's not, you're not making a living off it anyways, there's no doubt about that. Then the third tier, which Cora will be coming into, might be earning 6,000 euros to 12,000 euros. So it would be very similar to going to America for the summer, even level of money you might get and playing, only it's a different code. I'd say Cora could head out there at this time of the year to the same club for the next 3 years, which is it's a lovely deal for her. Now, she said her work were very understanding that they're allowing her go for 4 months. Whether they allow her do that on an annual basis is another hurdle for maybe her to get over.
What it also does, funnily enough, off the back of the last topic, is it puts her on the another level, sort of gives her more marketability. Like, you know, it just, it does. She has so much more stories, more experience, and a new market for her as well in Australia to break into.
It does, it absolutely does, and I think it even elevates her to a new level, you know, nationally. We all know her, but now she's headed over to Australia and the first woman to do that, and, you know, play professional over there, just elevates her profile even further. So best of luck to Cora, and look, we'll try and get her on the podcast when we hear a little bit more about how she's getting on over there. Couple of bits of manager news, lads. Pat Gilroy obviously has been announced as the hurling manager. We talked about this in the podcast when it was only a kind of a whisper. We got it right. We thought Conal, our very own Conal, was in with him. We're still waiting to hear about this. Conal says he hadn't heard anything about that. But Gilroy is an interesting character, and he was he did media this week. He was at the launch of that Fenway Classic. I don't know why he even mentioned what he's at, because I didn't get an invite to go to it. I would like to have interviewed him, so we might edit that Fenway Classic bit out of this list. But anyways, he was talking about, which is interesting enough, he was asked about Kieran Kilkenny, Cormac Costello, Eric Lowndes, Dermot Connolly, all these fellas on the football team, and I thought it was interesting what he said. He won't be going for any of these lads necessarily. He's a good relationship with Jim Gavin. And he said, and Conal Keeney has said the very same thing as this on the hurling show. He says, if you go to club championship matches and you see those guys playing, they're struggling playing hurling. They don't stand out at club level hurling. So in my head, all these lads are brilliant hurlers. You know, you have it in your head, the brilliant minors. Like, they're brilliant minors 5-6 years ago. Yeah. Like, a hurling is so specialised and skillful, you have to have your eye in for it. So they're coming back from a football season playing club. Pat Gilroy can only pick off what he sees at club level, and these lads are just, you know, they're all right, you know. So, like, kind of interesting that none of these lads, he's not going to be going in trying to pick Jim Gavin's. Why would you leave the Dublin footballers for the hurlers anyway, realistically?
The poster boy for those guys is probably Conor Callaghan, though, based off what he did last year.
Yeah, he's the big one. He's the big one.
And then when you see Dermot Connolly look amazing for Vincent's playing hurling, but it's easy to say that when you see a club fixture, like, the difference between club and county is on another level. So, yeah, it's easy for us to say, oh, yeah, they'll all go to the hurling. They might be a bit pissed off that they're on the bench for the footballers, but he seems to be taking a fairly sensible approach to it so far.
Yeah, he does. And to be honest, Pat Gilroy's main focus should be getting Danny Sutcliffe, Paul and Mark Shute, Paul Ryan, Shane Durkin, Johnny McCaffrey, Peter Kelly, Joey Boland, and all these fellas that jumped ship from Ger Cunningham. If he gets all these fellas back, he's got half the battle, and then maybe sweet talk Conor Callaghan. God, look, you've got Young Player of the Year, which he's going to get. You've got your All Star. Do 1 year on, 1 year off, Con. You know what I mean?
Two testimonials at the end of it.
Yeah, okay. Eamon Fitzmaurice has extended his contract for 2 more years. Which seems like the right decision based on the fact that there could be a little transitional period while he's trying to get these under 21s. He's been very slow to bring these minors in, lads. When we won Minor All-Ireland, we took 1 year with the under 21s, and then about 7 of us went in. Now, that's too many. Mm. But, like, they've won that first minor maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and we're not really seeing any of them coming in. So he's been too slow to bring them in, as far as I'm concerned. But he's given 2 years now. And I thought Tomás O'Shea made a very interesting comment on RT Radio when he said, two-year contract makes no difference to Eamon. If Kerry don't do well next year, Eamon will just give it up. What I mean? He's not going to hang on in a job that he doesn't think he's doing well in. Like, he'll have to see progression this year, or else, like, what is a contract in GAA anyways, lads? It's not really a contract. It's just an agreement.
Well, I thought that the extension of the two-year term might actually give him time to kind of develop these youngsters and bring them in, because I think if you think that you're kind of quitting at the end of the season, you might think, oh, well, I can't bring these in. I have to go with the kind of safe you know, players that you know and trust, and kind of you're nearly afraid to bring new players in case they don't make an instant impression. But it was just interesting to see when Kerry GAA tweeted it out, there was a few responses to it, and I five or six responses, and amongst them were crazy, SMH, which I mean shaking my head, best of luck, but we haven't improved in 12 months, the heat will be on. And then there was one from great news, I'm absolutely delighted, winky face, three laughing emojis, and this was from a guy with a Dublin crest as his avatar. So, you know, when people say that they, you know, there's pressure in Kerry, they're not lying.
No, definitely not. SMH, shaking my head.
I had to look it up.
Oh yeah, I didn't know that. Like, what's he done wrong? Like, he's lost to Dublin and Mayo, and
the sweeper thing was the big thing. See, a few tactic things, but you know what? There's politics in every county, Conan. You know, you're always going to have opposition to all managers, and when managers from rival club or members from a rival club see a mistake being made, they're like, "Whoa!" And especially in Kerry, we haven't won in All Ireland in 3 years. This is a disaster.
But it seems to me that if it wasn't for him, if it's Morris, Kerry would not have won one this, like, you know, since 2009. Is that right? So they wouldn't have won one this decade, like, if it wasn't for him, because he was the one that changed everything. He shut the public out from training, he played a new way because he realised he had to, like, he probably professionalised the whole thing, as we're talking earlier. Like, he is the reason why they're still competing, and the fact that they've lost to Dublin 2 years in a row there, now lost to Mayo, like, geez, so what? Like, they're losing to two of the best teams ever, probably.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. One more bit of news is John Myler, and this is just news today. John Myler has been appointed as Cork senior hurling manager. So he was in as a selector last year, I'm pretty sure, and he is now the manager. So there's a bit of continuity there. And, you know, Cork hurling is in a good place after this year. Bit of a surprise that Kingston stood down, although I think work commitments were kind of getting on top of him. He's around the country an awful lot. So according to Dermot O'Sullivan, he wasn't too surprised that Kieran Kingston stepped down. But that's another appointment. So we'll keep an eye on. We might try and get him on the phone, see what his philosophy is about. Right, lads, I want to talk about the championship draw, which is tonight, because... every year I complain about this, lads. Every year, are we ready for this? Are we ready for this now? The All-Stars haven't even been given out for last year. We're in the middle of Club Championship, which is brilliant coverage with TG4 and Air Sport. We're just in that zone now. And now we're going to look ahead to next year, which, like, every year I complain about it. I think they're missing a huge trick in marketing the draw and making a big deal out of the draw. And again, this is just coming along in October when nobody cares. What it's almost a nuisance rather than something that we should really, really be looking forward to.
They did it 2 years ago in the middle of the Rugby World Cup and nobody paid any attention whatsoever. Last year, I think it was definitely less than 2 weeks after the replayed All-Ireland final. Remember Tom Parsons?
Oh, it was worse last year, yeah.
Do you know, I was like, especially as a Mayo fan looking at this, you're like, oh my God, you just want to forget about the season for a while. And then Tom Parsons is there talking about next year. You're right, I mean, they miss a trick. I mean, there's such a big opportunity to market your main product, your championship, and they're doing it 7-8 months before it's even going to start. And then it's going to start, as it always does, with a dead rubber game in New York rather than a big glitzy fixture that they really could get the championship going. But... I don't know, is it to think that they have to pencil these things in, you know, fixtures wise and dates and stuff like that, but I don't know, I think it's a poor excuse, and I fully agree with you about them missing an opportunity.
Yeah, so obviously tonight the draws for the Leinster and Munster hurling championships are not going to be televised. They're going to be run off on leagues now, so that's going to be one change that we're going to see tonight. So the two big hurling championships will not be on telly tonight. A lot of things are going to change next year, lads. Obviously we know with the new Super 8s are squeezing the season in, so the All-Ireland final, okay, next year's not a good example because the Pope is coming and I don't think there's too much change, but the Leinster Championship is getting squeezed, it's shortening by 3 weeks. Connacht Championship is shortening by 3, Ulster by 2, and Munster is down to 4 weeks, so I think that's from 7, so 3. So all these provincial championships now are being run off week after week, which is fantastic as well because they get dragged out a little bit too much. What is interesting is that there's going to be so many games every weekend, right? Which I'm all for. I think this is going to be fantastic. Like, I mean, you look at it, the likely start for a lot of the championship, you know, I know that New York one will probably kick it off, which is a disaster, but May the 12th and the 13th, there's going to be an 8 round robin provincial hurling championship matches. Then there's going to be a Connacht football quarter final, an Ulster preliminary game and 3 Leinster preliminary quarterfinals. There's 13 headline games on that weekend, which is great as well. But then as you go further on into the championship, this is something I've a little bit of a problem with. On the weekend of June the 9th, for example, there's going to be 21 games. So there's going to be 8 first round football qualifiers, 2 Leinster football semi-finals, 8 provincial round robin hurling games and 3 tier 2 hurling games. This is all on the same weekend. Now the problem I have with this is I'm all for 21 games that weekend if it's in the same kind of competition. So like, I mean, the 2 Leinster football semi-finals, that could be Kildare, Mead, Dublin and I don't know, another county. They trump qualifiers. Do you know what I mean? So the qualifiers are kind of getting lost that weekend, and it'll be the same with Ulster semi-finals if they're clashing with qualifiers. So you still have this messy scenario where qualifiers are going to be running parallel with the provincial championships. Provincial championships are more prestigious than early round qualifiers. So the qualifiers are going to kind of get lost. And even from doing the podcast and trying to kind of get your running order done, you're not going to cover the qualifiers then unless it's a real glamorous one. Even though it's a fix and we're seeing a lot more games, it's still a mess. It's still messy.
We got to the root of your complaint there. The podcast is in trouble.
But there is a point though, lads. Like, I mean, you know, this is the thing, and I missed out on this CPA thing, and they have a master fixtures plan. And like, just get this clear in our heads. The CPA have a master fixture plan. The GEA don't have one yet. They're just making it up as they go along every year. They say they're going to bring one out. Why on earth would the GAA not be driving this master fixtures plan? Why does a players' union need to be set up? Why do they need to go to the organisation and try and force them to do the most logical thing that anybody can ever even think of, is to have different parts of the year for different competitions? And they have one, and they're getting opposition from the GAA for actually trying to implement this. Like, I mean, and they're trying to force the GAA to do the obvious thing, is to stop overlapping competitions, have the different parts of different year, stop dragging players in different directions. Why are we seeing opposition from the organisation for something that seems so bloody obvious?
Well, and the thing is, there were 2 big problems last year that got addressed at the same time, and everyone's at fault for bringing them up, and the GAA are mostly at fault for even listening to anyone. But the problem was that everyone wanted better, more competitive fixtures more often. So that was one issue. And the other one was, we needed more time for clubs. And they addressed them at the same time, so they shortened the calendar and they brought in the Super 8s and changed the hurling and that. Like, so you had 12 more games. It's like a quarter-final stage with 3 less weeks to do it. So,
and they changed the hurling because the hurling people said that we don't have enough games. That wasn't even in their thoughts when they fixed the football. Like, I mean, it's all putting out fires, lads, instead of fire prevention. Like, I mean, that's just the way they work.
Yeah, the CPA actually went to the GAA this week and asked them to view the Masters fixtures plan that the GAA were working on and weren't allowed. And the CPA not only have one, they have actually 2 or 3.
3 options to pick
three
from.
Options.
And I actually don't want to brag here, lads, but one of those options is my option. And they have not credited me with my... It is my championship restructure.
Is it their preferred one?
Almost to a T. I don't know if their preferred
CPA,
one.
CPA, Colin Parkinson Association.
I'm pulling the CPA up on this. One of them is mine. One of them is mine. I have a copyright on one of them, and I'm disappointed it's not called the Woolly Plan.
I can't wait to get Declan Brennan on next week. Like, I want to pull you up on something for a second.
I wanted to get him on actually, but I can't remember why it didn't come to pass, because they have to get pulled up on this. They have to get pulled up. They can't just rob my idea without crediting me for it. That's the way it works, isn't it? You have to credit work that you take from someone else. So yeah, listen, no one's looking forward to this tonight. We can keep banging the drum, but the GAA just don't listen, and that's the unfortunate truth about this. They don't listen to a lot of logic. They just want to keep going along the way they're going and kind of bank on the huge amount of love and loyalty people have to the association. They could put anything out there and people will go, because it's part of our lives and we love it. And I think they kind of take advantage of that a lot of the time.
Yeah, you just look at the testimonials.
Yeah. They have nothing to do with that. Last thing, lads, because we're gone way over time, which I often like to say, lads. I'm calling this Crazy GAA Rule Part 78. So we all know about crazy GAA rules. I've been on the receiving end of one of them this summer, which is just absolute farcical stuff. Frank Murphy, who's on the rules committee, was contacted by the Laois County Board twice. One was with my case, and he quoted a rule to say I couldn't play. Then he was asked again. I don't know why he was asked the second time when the Laois County Board should have stuck. Like, if they go, they went through so much shit with me about my rule, why did they need to go back to Frank with the exact same case just involving two other people? But that's a whole other story. So they go back to Frank, and Frank appears with another rule for these fellas, and they allow him play county final, and I've missed out on the year playing intermediate. Like, it's absolutely bizarre. But this one's even better, lads. If you want one. So this was David White and Daryl Flynn. Daryl Flynn is a habit of getting sent off. Now, I can only remember one against us in a Leinster final, but I'm just going to tell him.
That's a habit, all right.
I know, I'm pretty sure he's a bit short fused because I think he does get sent off. But anyways, him and David White got sent off in the Kildare County final. Moorfield down to 13 men. Brilliant character shown to hold off Selbridge and win the county title. But they went up and celebrated by lifting the cup after the game. Now, you might not know this, Conor, because you're looking at me very confused. Conan isn't, because I told him earlier on. There is a rule that states if you're sent off in a championship match, you are prevented from going up and celebrating with the cup. These two fellas could be facing a one-game ban because there's a picture of these two fellas holding the cup. Isn't that absolutely fantastic?
That's the stupidest rule I've ever heard of in life. Like, what is that about? And especially if you want to go on to it, like, you know, these boys have been training for 12 months and for years and years and stuff, and they're
captain. What subsection is that hidden in? It must be like deep within the bowels of any kind of rule book. Oh my God, it's the worst thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, so whoever they play in the Leinster club, which I think could be Portlaoise or Road, might maybe think about putting in a little objection to this waving a cup around the place.
You'd be embarrassed, wouldn't you? You couldn't. Oh, no way.
Well, listen. It's all about winning now, right? Yeah. Win at all costs.
Yeah, you would do it actually in the other club, even if you didn't agree with it at all.
Yeah, just anonymously, someone from the
club. The best evidence,
20 years from now. So how did you win that club title? Well,
you're shooting down two of their best players here, two inter-county standard players. But listen, we'll see how that goes.
Right,
like I said, we've gone way over time, lads. We're going to come back and we're going to talk to Mark McHugh.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
out
at me.
Of a crowded area, is it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a pointing coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
AIB, back in club and county.
All right, delighted to say Mark McHugh is on the line now. Mark, how are the celebrations going up in Kilcare?
They've they've calmed down a good bit, Colin, but listen, for the Sunday, Monday there, it was like the whole town went and shut down by a few of the bars. It was great. I think it was after seeing there online on one of your own sites. The joy of the people coming down the street on Sunday, there was older generations there with tears in their eyes, and you know, even to see the young people about that's going to be future players for Kilcare, it's great. And you know, it's a different feeling. You know, myself and Patrick walked down the same street and with the Sam in 2012, but it's a different feeling because you're there with your best friends, you grew up together with them, and I suppose doing it for them and for the people of the Byers is what makes football all about, club football, and that's why it's so close to our hearts.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I was reading during the week, Kilcare, there's about 900 people living in Kilcare. For some reason in my head I thought it was a much bigger town. So like, you're talking about a very small, close-knit community.
Yeah, and to be fair to us, I think we've overachieved, you know, with the numbers we have. I think it is right, about 900, I think there's 500 houses in total.
Right.
You know, and obviously half of them then are women as well. So it's something we pride ourselves a lot on. You know, we've won three under-21s and three minors in the last maybe 6-7 years. We've been thereabouts competing for the senior championship, and we've won the senior league now. Two out of the last three, and we've another chance to win it now again this weekend. So three out of the last four would be lovely. And to be fair to Kilcare, we you know, it's a cliche, but we live and breathe football down there. And you know, probably we'd be something similar maybe to even Slochneil or something with a small community that they have. And you know, we love our football, and you know, it's it's just great to have that monkey off her back too for the 24 years. I know it's saying it's a small club, but for a club that's in tradition like Kilcare that has won championships in the past, and with the talent of footballer we have, it would be a sin, you know, to go another few years without winning. So hopefully that monkey in the back has give us maybe a bit of confidence and, you know, belief for the younger lads within the club to go on and compete now for another few years.
You mentioned that monkey off your back, and the 24 years is one monkey off your back, but also the pressure of having such a talented team, having won at underage and having not made that breakthrough at senior level, you know, losing last year's final when you were, you know, favourites, you didn't show up in a day. You must have felt, you must have been under a lot of pressure to make the breakthrough.
I think we were, and, you know, we didn't really want to think about it ourselves, but probably deep down we knew that pressure was building and building, especially after last year, where I think we know ourselves we didn't really perform in the day, and Glen Swilly really did a number on us, and, you know, they're the ones that got over the line. And I think the boys, you know, to be fair, this year put in a lot of work. We were away with Donegal, we kind of slid back in very seamlessly, and it was it's all credit to the boys at home. And I think after last year and the hurt, you know, if I heard it once, I might have heard it a thousand times since last year. You have to lose one to win one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I always thought maybe during the year that was a bit of a cliche, but I think it definitely stood by us last year, the defeat in the final, and it got us over the line this year because our game management was probably a wee bit better than it was last year. And if we had that experience against Glen Swilly last year, I think we might have got over the line a bit earlier. But you know, you learn these things, and you know, you push on and go again.
And you definitely needed that kind of experience in this game, because it was pure dour game, right? From the reports I've read, there was only 2 points in the second half. You got your noses in front before half time, but, like, I mean, when the game is so close, just one goal and you're gone, you know, and this kind of thing. So you could never relax the whole way through the game.
Yeah, listen, it was a funny game, Colm. It was it was one of the weirdest games I've ever been involved in. You know, we figured Glendies would have to do something after we kind of beat them comprehensively enough in last year's semi-final, and we knew that they were going to have to do something different. They went pretty much very very defensive, but what else they did is when they came up against our defensive shield, they didn't try to break lines or anything. They just kept ball. So we were lucky enough in the first half, you know, to get a few points ahead of them, and we kind of figured ourselves at half time that maybe they would come out and, you know, try to pressure the ball a wee bit high up the field, and, you know, maybe turn us over or something like that. But they didn't, and they held that defensive shell. And I suppose what they were probably thinking to themselves, if they were going into the last 10 minutes, you know, only maybe the 2 or 3 points in it, that they, you know, they could have nicked it. And you know, as I said, throughout the whole game, even though, you know, we were comfortable enough on the ball, we still couldn't get that 4 or 5 point lead that we needed. And it was there right up until the end. But, you know, Glendies have a lot of experience when it comes to county champions and county finals, and they've been great champions, like, for a team like them to win three in the last 10 as well. So it's it was joy for us to probably, you know, they're probably one of our because they've been so successful, our real nemesis. So it was good to get over the line against them as well.
Yeah, I agree with you to a certain point, Mark, that it's about getting over the line. And I saw your comments after the game that we're not in the entertainment business, that you played well in the semi-final. But, like, I suppose the bigger picture of the Donegal Club Championship is that every team is playing the counter-attacking game. And, like, I don't blame Kilcare or Glenties, because if you're going in to play a team that's playing counter-attacking football, you'd be mad to push all your players up and try and take them on, because that's what they want. So, like, how is the Donegal Championship going to evolve away from this? Because unless a group of teams decide to change their style of play, there's no motivation for others to actually change theirs. Do you know what I mean? Because counter-attacking teams want to play against teams that push up on them.
I know, and listen, you know, I suppose last year's final wasn't a great spectacle either, but it's new thing to us. I think it's horses for courses. Like, you know, even last year in the semi-final, the semi-final this year and the semi-final last year, you know, we played really expansive football. So I think maybe, you know, Glen Swilly and Niamh Conlon were maybe a wee bit feared or just right, cautious maybe that what we could do to them. You know, I felt like our tactics going into the game was, you know, we're just going to play our normal the football unless we weren't able to. And I think that's where we came up against a barrier, you know, a very good barrier within Glenties. And we just felt at halftime, us being 3 points up, you know, is there any point in, you know, trying to break lines like we did last year against Glens Foley and be turned over and, you know, them going up the field and getting an easy score that we're not set up for? I just feel... I know that these people in the media, you're giving out, and you're, but I just maybe you know, if it's about that this year especially for us. I don't know about any other teams because I can't really comment on them. But I think it was just about us getting over the line this year, and we were gonna do anything that we needed to do to get over that line. Maybe, you know, down the line now, when I said that the monkey's off your back, maybe you can just, you know, with a bit of less pressure, you know, try to maybe, you know, get ahead more in a game and hopefully see it out that way, you know. But I still think the football in Donegal is good. Like, we've seen Gidor this year really stepped up. You know, they're going to be about for a long time. And Unions is always going to be there. You know, you've ourselves, you have St. Michael's, you have Brent Swilley, who'll welcome back Neil Gallagher next year. So compared to a lot of other counties, like I'm just taking, say, Kilcoo there, for example. They just won 5 in a row. You have Scotstown, who won 3 in a row. At least in Donegal, it's still competitive. And I don't know, you know, I think it's good to have it that way. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. But, you know, even look at your own county, Portlaoise seems to be winning every year. And is that good for club football?
Yeah, no, you've definitely got more spread of teams that can win it. I suppose it's the fact that a lot of the teams are playing the same, you know, defensive style, and maybe they're low-scoring games. Or maybe there's one or two low-scoring games and they receive the national kind of attention, and we don't hear about the good games maybe up in the Donegal Championship.
Yeah, and listen, there definitely is some very good games. If I don't know, did you watch the Gidor and Glenties game in the semi-final? It was on Air Sport. That was definitely, I suppose, a game of two halves. At halftime, yeah, I could never see Gidor getting beat. But fairness, Glenties, they dug in, and it was a really, really good, intense, you know, second half. It would have been as good as club match would have been out all weekend. I think what Donegal probably comes up short is we haven't had a good county final in a long time.
Right.
Because I think people are, you know, teams are probably a bit nervous going into these games because, you know, especially for us as a senior this weekend, it's been new territory, and that we would probably, you know, as I said, you feel under pressure going into these finals, and you're maybe a wee bit afraid to play your expansive football. And, you know, if we went through. We've only lost probably one game now in the whole last two championships, was last year's final. Like, we came out of the group stages, the only one team was Unions that we drew with them. But there were some games that we really showed what we were about. And it was just when it came to them finals, maybe we kind of were just a bit cautious. And I think that's probably, when you're looking at the reason, Donegal gets a wee bit of a slag. But I still think I would rather a county that you maybe 5, 6, 7 teams that can win a county championship, whereas, you know, if you're looking in Armagh or Down, or, you know, Leash, or yeah, even Mayo, Galway and Corrifan, like, you know, is that good for any club, you know, any county? I don't know, but I still think what we have in Donegal is not bad.
Come here, were you worried at any point during the start of the year? You obviously lost the county final last year. Then you got hammered by Gidor earlier in the year. Well, not hammered, 4-12 to 2-9. Then your father stepped down, who was manager last year, got you to the county final. Was things looking to start falling apart at that stage, or what was the reasons behind your father stepping down?
Yeah, listen, he just had... he had a few things he needed to concentrate on, personal things, and that's his call. And it was a big letdown for us as a club, because he, you know, the work we put in last year under him was definitely stood to us this year again. But
right, so it was nothing to do with necessarily commitment for it wasn't anything to do with
No. Like, you're on about that game against Gidor. That was a guilty game. I think we were missing 10 players that day, and Gidor had a reasonably strong team, so I wouldn't read too much into that. But no, he stepped away for reasons of his own accord, and we went on the hunt for a manager, and it was probably. It felt at that stage probably it didn't look too well, because of you're halfway nearly through the year and you didn't get, you know. So but by fairness to Barry came in and he'd be well known within the community. He played for Kilcare for years himself, and he got his Backham team on board. And as I said, the boys put in a lot of hard nights over the year when we were away, and we came back there after the Galway match, and we seemed to fit in. You know, there was a few tough sessions after that now, but we seemed to fit in seamlessly enough, and they were well up to pace where we needed them to be. And you know, to be fair, there's boys at home that always lead that. You know, within the team, Kieran McGinley's a great leader. You know, when we're away, and he you know, he kind of drives on them training sessions. So to answer your question, was I worried? I probably for a while, you know, but seeing that we beat the fancied Gidor team in the first round of the championship in Towney, I still thought, yeah, there's definitely potential here if we can knuckle down and get through the group stages. And you know, you never know, hopefully with a good draw, which we were happy enough with. And it was a long time coming, but I don't think I was worried at any stage now.
Okay.
Just by moving forward now, Colin, and hopefully, as I said, you know, making that there maybe two or three championships over the next 5-6 years, and you know, taking out Michael Higgerty and Conor McShane. You know, I think Kieran McGinley's the oldest, and he's 28, and I think I'm the second oldest then at 27. So we've a young enough squad when it comes to that. But if you look at our forwards the last day, Patrick McBurdy, who was only 24, was our oldest forward. So you know, there's a bright future there for us.
Yeah, because I had my eye out for Michael Hegarty. I played a minor All-Ireland semi-final against him in 1996, so he's pushing on like myself.
Good
so
man.
He's back centre back.
Good
for,
man, good man.
He was centre forward back then, I'm pretty sure. No, he could have been right half back. I'm not sure. He's versatile anyways.
He is, like, you know, Hegarty, to be fair to him, over the years, he's probably played in every single position for Kilcare.
Yeah.
You know, he played midfield when his legs were going well. Now we kind of developed a role this year for him that was... he's very good on the ball and he's very smart, so we
playmaking centre back.
He drops in there and drops a wee bit deep, and he, you know, he's a platform for a lot of our starting our attack. So he was a happy man over the weekend too, and we'll see how many more years is left in Nickerty. But you know, to be fair to him, he's given what he's given to Kilcare over his last whatever 20 years is a credit to him, and he. You know, he's a real legend about Kilcare.
Yeah, he might even inspire me to lace up my boots again. Come here, you got man of the match, Mark, in the county final, and I know myself from past experience that must have been a really sweet feeling in front of the new Donegal manager, because you've kind of slipped off the radar in the county terms in the last few years. Like, you haven't nailed down a starting team, and this is coming from being an all-star in 2012. You know, the best sweeper the game had seen at that time, and for whatever reasons in the last two or three years you've kind of lost your way maybe a little bit as in a starter for Donegal.
Yeah, listen, it was it's been a tough, you know, number of years, but I think when you're on about, you know, the sweeping back then, it was a wee bit different. People were just kicking it down your throat, you know. To be fair, I would think the last two or three years I've probably been playing better football the last two or three years than I was playing in 2012.
It's really
just the system suited me down to the ground. But that's a personal view. I don't know, other people probably won't think that, but I just more probably think I'm a more round, mature footballer now, that I've learned a lot, and it's going to be, you know, hard to, you know, that Donegal team's a good team at the minute, and it's a hard enough team to make. So it was a great feeling. It was a good moment for myself personally, and you know, it's not about man of the matches or you know, personal awards. It's getting over that. Talk to Maguire, be honest with you, and Casey and Patrick left that, and that was our goal all year, and that was the main one. So we'll see how the Ulster goes, and then we'll get back in with Donegal then whenever things start up, and we'll meet with Declan and see what he has planned, and hopefully then, you know, make a decision on it for the year coming.
Yeah, so is it easy or is it difficult rather to refocus now for the Ulster club? Because like you said, you've no experience of it. I remember in 99 Portlaoise won the county championship for the first time in maybe 9 years, and it was our first one, and we didn't really entertain the Leinster club too much. We took it seriously, we thought, at the time, but going by how seriously we took it towards the end of my career, it was like chalk and cheese. So, you know, it's probably difficult after winning it the county championship for the first time. Like it's a, like you said, last year's county final gave you the experience for this year's one. You've no experience going into the Ulster club, and that's a whole new world that you need to kind of gain experience at.
I know it probably is, yes, and it's new to everybody. But I would also like to think that, you know, we have a number of players that have played county football for Donegal at either minor, under 21, or senior, and they would have enough experience in their locker to, you know, to give it a good rattle. As I said, we're back training now this evening. We have a league match this weekend to see can we just finish up one in the league, and we'll knuckle down, and you know, we'll definitely give it our best shot. I know as you're saying, after the last few days in Kilkenny, probably back to train tonight would be the last thing that I'd really like to hear. But I think it was just, I think the boys in Scots Town 2A, they won their three in a row, so I'm sure they had a day or two celebrating as well. So we just hope that I also think, if you think about it, I think, as I said, the burden's off your back now, that county championship. Go out and express yourself. I think there's totally no pressure on us going into this game, where it's a complete opposite to the one we were going into against Glenty. So you might be a really good football now. Look, they're final now. They won a bit more honey. I think we've a tough job tomorrow. Connor McCarthy, who scored 1-8, but I think there's no pressure on you. It's something new to the boys, and we're going up in anything. I think we won after this year is just a bonus, and as I said, hopefully learn from experiences and stuff like that going forward in future years.
Yeah, okay, listen Mark, thanks very much, and best of luck against Scotstown and in the league final at the weekend.
Cheers, Colin, good man.
Alright, we'll be back and we'll take a look ahead to all the county finals on this weekend and talk to Stephen O'Keefe as well.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys, so I brought them down, and so we actually sold them to. I think we had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkeys from there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
They call it. Yeah, you see them on the beaches, never. And so you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your, we'd say, your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, a donkey in Eden Palace.
Yeah, lads, so there's loads of county finals on this weekend, and we're just going to call out probably the big ones. The big replay in Cork, Senior Football Championship final replay, Nemo Rangers versus St Finbarr's. That's on at 1 o'clock in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and that is a curtain raiser to the hurling county final between Blackrock and Imokilly, and that's at 4 o'clock in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Kerry County final, Dr Crokes versus South Kerry, that's in Austin Park at 3 p.m. London Senior Football Championship, Fulham Irish, Owen Mulligan plays for them versus Tyrconnell Gales, that's in Ruislip at 2:30. Roscommon County final, Roscommon Gales versus St Bridget's, that's a pretty big game as well. And the Sligo Senior Football Championship between Eastern Harps and Turlestrone is in Markovich Park at 4 p.m. Aerogan versus Rathfilly in the Carlow final is in Dr Cullen Park at 3:15. But the big one that we want to concentrate on is between Ballygunner and De La Salle, and that's in Walsh Park at the weekend. And I'm delighted to say Stephen O'Keefe is on the line to help us talk about that. Stephen, you're kind of in no man's land. You're going for 3 in a row and 5 in a row are the two big milestones.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. But I suppose we've followed Hartley over us now, and he's, you know, he's been fantastic for us throughout the year. He's kept the lads completely, you know, on their toes, I suppose. We've been going a long time at Waterford, so it's kind of been hard on the club players. They must have had, I suppose, 3 or 4 months where, you know, you could say they were idle, but I think Fergal's kept them fairly busy, and I suppose you can see what the results were after having this year as well. You know, lads are still, they still very much have the hunger, I suppose.
Yeah, and how did he look after you then after the All-Ireland final? You know, did he give you a little bit of time to get over it mentally, or was the best thing to do to get into club training and meet the lads and kind of get over it that way?
Well, we had the week off afterwards. We would put the full 7 days, which I suppose we took to kind of commiserate with each other on the water team and drown the sorrows or whatever.
Yeah.
But after that, we've been playing every single week with the club championship to try and get a run off in time for Munster. So, you know, it's effectively been straight back into it. We had a 7-day break, and since then it's been week on week championship. So there hasn't been too much time, I suppose, to dwell on, you know, on the All-Ireland in that sense.
Yeah, you'll come back down to earth around December when the club finishes. Not exactly something to look forward to.
No.
Clear, you're dominating Waterford hurling at the moment. Obviously, you said you're going for 4 in a row, and you're winning the county finals pretty convincingly. Like, you hammered Mount Sion, who are huge rivals of yours traditionally. Last year, you hammered Passage in the final. You know, are you starting to dominate Waterford hurling now, you know, more than before?
I think we're definitely on a good run at the moment. There's some great players, but I think one of the main things that happens, we were actually in the county final, I think 4 years ago now at this stage, against Passage, and I think we're up by 7 or 8 points with about 5 minutes to go. And in fairness, they never gave up, and I'll never forget the feeling after coming out of that one, after, you know, somehow losing the game. You know, it was a 9-point turnaround in 5 minutes, and, you know, you're so shell-shocked coming out of the place.
Yeah.
And I think that's still on a lot of players' minds, you know, every time they go up to train, I suppose it just adds an extra focus every time you go to train and every match that, you know, we never want to have any feeling like, you know, like that ever again. Like, so I think that's actually been a huge building block, and then one of the huge drivers behind how we've won 3 in a row so far anyway.
Right, okay, so that was the 2013 final. You lost to Passage 3-16 to 3-13, and you were hammering them. So the lesson learned there is, when you're on top of a team, nail them, you know, don't give them any kind of opportunity to get back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about Ballygunner's style of play, Stephen, because we know how Waterford play, and we were talking to Mark McHugh in the show earlier on, and Donegal played a certain style, and the clubs in Donegal copied that style. So now Donegal club football is very, very defensive. Have the Waterford clubs kind of adopted the intercounty style, or is there different styles at play?
It's hard to say, to be honest. I think a lot of teams are different. We've often come up against teams, right, who would say maybe one or two in the full forward line and have an extra defender or whatever. But I suppose we would try to have three in the full forward line, and we try basic rules like the six backs, you know, stay roughly within the 65, you know, not be getting dragged out, you know, off at the pitch, and try hold your shape a little. I suppose we always try to look for the man in the best position, even if that means a short pass or a long one if it's on or whatever. I suppose it's hard to say at club level. I don't think the same amount of detail goes into it. A lot is left to the players, you know, in the sense of, you know, kind of let instinct drive it completely on the day a little bit, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's kind of off the cuff hurling, maybe a little bit more. Are you bored then in club hurling, because you get on the ball so much for Waterford? You're like an extra defender. You spend loads of time off your line. So if you're keeping your six backs back there, you probably don't play that sweeper keeper role as much then with the club.
Well, I suppose it really all depends. I would find a lot of the games this year to be quite quiet for myself, anyway, especially with like the likes of Barry Coughlin in front of me. You know, there's not a whole lot coming through, but sure, I suppose when you're on goal, really, you shouldn't really be complaining, you know, that kind of way as well.
Yeah, well, you like to be in the thick of it though, right?
Yeah, I kind of fancy myself as an outfielder, to be honest. But
but you've had to, though, Stephen. Like, I mean, because you were known pretty much when you came on the scene as a shot stopper, and you've completely transformed your game into being an extra defender. Pretty much, you're always there, available for a pass, and you set up attacks, and your distribution is really good. So, you've evolved a lot as a goalkeeper.
Yeah, well, I suppose I think that's just. I suppose because the actual role of the goalkeeper has changed, I think you're seeing a good few less actual shots being taken unless the fella's right in on top of you, where it's you have about a 1 in 10 chance of saving it. So, and I suppose what you see a lot is as well, maybe a cornerback under pressure with, you know, facing you, and I suppose, Jesus, you know, why not go out and, you know, take the hand pass off him, you know, and give it, you know, have a clearance of 60 yards rather than forcing him to hit the ball over his shoulder under pressure. And it just makes sense, and I suppose it just evolves like that, working on things in training, being more comfortable. Like that, but I suppose in saying that now, even in the semi final against Lismore, I came out looking for one of those hand passes and I didn't get it, and the ball ended up trickling into the goal. So,
oh my god,
you know, so there's a bit of tweaking to be done still, I suppose.
But like, I mean, that you're the last line of defence, so like, I mean, like Conal Keeney sometimes on the podcast, you know, these daisy cutter passes that are running towards your feet, and it's a nightmare. Like, sometimes goalkeepers puck outs when they go to the corner back, they'll give them a short one along the ground, and like, there's a lot, puts them under a lot of pressure. But if you're receiving one of those balls, you can't make a mistake when you get one of them.
No, that's the thing, I suppose. That's the trade-off. I suppose, there's huge benefits to coming out and helping out the back line like that, but I suppose, you know, if it ever goes wrong once, I suppose that's all, you know, that's what's going to be sticking at the forefront of people's minds. So I suppose it's trying to find a balance of, I don't know, trying to help out the backs while completely minimising any risk. Because, if you know, like you said, if something does go wrong, it's, you know, it's a goal. And goal these days is actually worth a lot more than 3 points because, you know, it rises the team and, you know, all the rest of it. It shifts the momentum. So I suppose there is a bit of a risk involved as well.
Yeah, so I suppose mentally you need to be pretty strong. Mark Cooney, who's your goalkeeping coach, says that you're the quarterback. He says you're the Tom Brady. You need to be a bit of a freak to handle that kind of responsibility.
I don't know, but I don't know, but I think one thing I have actually tried to do this year a little bit is try and take maybe the emotion out of play, if that makes any sense. Maybe trying to play the game as opposed to the occasion. Maybe a year or two ago, maybe, you know, doing things in training and doing things in challenge games, which are the right decision, but maybe there's a slight bit of risk involved. And then come on to the championship day when it, you know, there's a big game, I'd nearly say, Jesus, that goes wrong, it could go tits up a bit. So
yeah,
but I think if it's the right thing to do, and I suppose that's something I've just tried to bring into the game, my game this year, maybe just being a bit more, you know, cool on the goal, I suppose.
Yeah, being cool. And I suppose distribution then with goalkeepers is another huge kind of evolution for them, as in, like, the huge long clearances, possession is so important now that puck outs aren't just being launched, you have to find somebody with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking out the pitch now on the goal, and I'm seeing the whole full forward line, you know, leaving the full back line, going back out to the half back line, then the whole half forward line is going back into their own half, you know, expecting a long one. So if you're just going to keep hitting it long, you're hitting it down to a 2-on-1 or possibly a 3-on-1 situation. And, you know, is that the best thing for the team? You know, probably not. Like, so maybe you do have to take a little bit of a risk and try and find a, you know, an open player in your own half, which obviously, you know, like I said, it does carry its own risks, but the payoff is big, you know, when it works out as well.
Yeah, no, so is Mark has been a big influencer, is it Derek McGrath that kind of tells you how to play the game, or do you kind of lead that?
I think it's a collective thing, to be honest. Like, you know, we'd have another chat, I suppose, myself, Iggy, Mark and Derek, maybe after games or after training or challenge matches, and, you know, go through maybe some things that did work and some things that didn't work. Or, you know, you might look at something and say maybe you tried to force that a little bit there, and, you know, because you have to remember, the fella you're passing it to has a lot on his plate as well. He has to deal with the ball coming towards him, and maybe four, you know, rabbit forwards running at him at the same time. So sometimes, even if you can get the ball there into his hand, like, is it the right thing to do if he's under too much pressure? And, you know, it's, I suppose, again, it's trying to find a balancing act, I suppose, with that.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, that must be the challenge, that all these options, when you're looking out the field, are swirling through your head. You have to process them and you have to make a decision in a big games in front of a big crowd. You know what I mean? There's not many players that have that responsibility on their shoulders.
No, I suppose not, but I it comes with the territory as well. And, in a certain way, I actually really enjoy it as well. I like the feeling of kind of maybe, you know, being in control and maybe having some control over the outcome of a game, which I suppose is a bit, you know, it's a novel feeling maybe for a goalkeeper to have. You know, if you get me, I suppose traditionally it was, you know, if you got shots taken on you and you could save them, that's brilliant and that's your job done. But I suppose now the role has completely moved on to, you're now the person who sets up the attacks. You know, you're now the person who organises the defenders, where, you know, when forwards are running all over the place. And I suppose there's just a lot more responsibility on the shoulders. But, you know, I don't see that as a bad thing at all.
Yeah, okay, so come here, you're working in Dublin in corporate banking. I know myself from working in Dublin, driving to Portlaoise is a disaster. Like, it's close on to 2 hours when you factor in just getting out of Dublin, it's nearly an hour. So Waterford, you're probably adding an extra hour onto that again. How do you manage that, and when do you eat? We know you're very fond of chips and ketchup and vinegar, but, like, even the nutrition side, because I always found that a challenge. Do I eat when I leave work, and what do I eat, or do I just forget about eating until after training? But then you're going from 1 o'clock until 10 o'clock without eating. You know, all these things commuters to training have to kind of factor in.
Yeah, but I suppose I've been lucky, and actually Bank of Ireland, to be honest, have been very supportive. They allow me to leave a little early on the Tuesday when we're training. You know, and it allows me that extra time to get down, because, like you said, it does take the bones of 3 hours when you're trying to get out of Dublin traffic. It's a bit of a nightmare. I suppose, as regards eating, I'd have something made up from the night before, like a chicken salad or, you know, something like that I could just eat in the car on the way down.
Right.
it's probably not the safest while driving, but anyway, what has to be done, I suppose.
Yeah, mobile phone to your ear and eating a chicken salad. I used to stop and get a muffin or something in a shop, but like, I mean, it's all changed now.
Muffins are out now.
Are you strict on what you eat? Because like what Derek McGrath was laughing and says, he almost leaves you at it if you like the chips, or is that whole story overblown?
It's a bit overblown. Like, I suppose I would have been true all right before. I would have struggled. I just didn't really like the taste of much. I used to be very, very fond of chips, but I've gotten a lot better now. And realistically, you know, so you can't be at that every day anymore. So I try and take on board as much as I can from Stevie Barrett, the nutritionist.
Yeah, okay. I'd say you have a love-hate relationship with him. Come here, listen, turning just back to Ballygunner before we finish up, Stephen. Like, I mean, you're dominating Waterford, but you're not making much of an impact on the Munster club. Like, I mean, you're beaten in 2015 by na Piershig. Like, I mean, that has to be the next step now. I know you'd probably say we can't look further in the county final, but like over the last 3 years, whatever about the first year, second year, like the shift has to start looking at a bigger picture, and Waterford Championship is only a stepping stone, maybe.
Yeah, 100%. Like, obviously, like you said, like we're going week on week at the moment, but realistically, I think this team, if we were to look back after we all finished and hadn't won a Munster, I think we would look at it as a failure, you know. Like, I don't want to get any indictment on the team as well, because we've come up against some brilliant teams in Munster. You know, I think we got beaten by Stars, Natura Stars once, you know, in the Piershig and Crat Lowell. Do you know what I mean? You know, yeah. Literally, you know, with County Stars. So it wasn't as if, you know, we were all in positions against maybe a lesser team and we just couldn't hang on, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But that is definitely, you know, a goal this team has, and hopefully, you know, we'll realise it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, because you're right, it is a really difficult championship to win, with Turles Farsfields are dominating and they're, you know, really strong, and obviously na Piershig are really strong as well. So look, there's no doubt it is a tough one to win. But like De La Salle, you know, got out of Waterford and won it twice. It was at 2008 and 2010, and you know, you play them at the weekend, you really need to probably make that step up and win one.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah, like I said, it is one of the goals that this group of players have, and you know, hopefully we can get it done. You know, if not this year, in the very near future, but hopefully, you know, hopefully we can kick on Sunday and then kick on after that again.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll have Milan trying to put a few past you on Sunday as well.
No, there's nothing new there. I've been trying to do that for a few years now.
Listen, Stephen, thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck Sunday.
No problem at all. Thanks, Willie.
All right, that's all we have time for this week. We'll be back next Thursday, and we'll have loads more club action to cover and a bit of news as well. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.